Well, how many of you have been in one of my sessions so far? Why don't you raise your hand so you have an idea of who? Okay. And how many were here for yesterday's when we did the practicing one-to-ones? Fewer. Okay.
That was 2 days.
No, that was yesterday. I know. Well, it was in the morning yesterday. Yeah. And today's in the evening. Yeah. So, so just for those who didn't get to hear the introductory piece, I'll do that again. And maybe one of these times I'll have one of you stand up and do it. So, I'm Susan Eng, and I'm a pastor rostered in the ELCA. And my years of parish ministry were in the Minneapolis area. Over a 16-year period, I was a parish pastor at first a small inner-city congregation and then a large suburban congregation, about equal amount of time in each place, 8.5 years, 7.5 years. After my second, near the end of that second parish that I was serving, I was getting very active in an organization in the Twin Cities called Isaiah. And it is one of many of its kind around the country that do congregation-based organizing, where lots of congregations come together to form an organization, and together they do things in the community to fight inequities and injustices and to work for greater justice. I became a full-time organizer with that organization after my parish ministry, or left doing parish ministry, and went into that work for about 4 years. And then about 4 years ago, I learned that the position I'm in now, which is the national director of the whole for the whole ELCA, the Lutheran Church, to be the director for congregation-based organizing. And it was a position that I had known about, had been in existence for about 7 years, and I knew the previous director and was very excited to apply for the position and was granted the position. So now I get to go around the country to our different places where Lutherans are and encourage them to get involved in the same work that I was doing when I was a pastor and then when I was an organizer in the Minneapolis area. Congregation-based community organizing, I like to say, is a two-pronged thing. it has a set of tools and attitudes and disciplines that are useful in congregations to help congregations become more effective at what they've always wanted to do, whatever that is, you know, partly proclaiming the gospel, teaching people about Jesus, living their faith in their daily lives, growing leaders, creating a sense of community. The tools of community organizing are really good to help that improve and become more vital in our congregations. And the other prong is the same tools can be put to work in our life in the world. So community organizing is one of the ways that the Lutheran Church just talks about being a public church. And it's different than some of the other things on a spectrum of ways that we can respond to the world. There's charity, and there's community development, and there's advocacy, and a number of other things, and there's organizing. And organizing doesn't work on direct services, feeding the poor or the hungry, for example, but looks at why are so many people poor and hungry? And what can we do in our power to remedy that? What small or large bites can we take out of these issues? And it has to do with systemic concern, systemic change, not just a Band-Aid, and we'll talk about that a little later, not just a Band-Aid on something, but let's stop these practices from creating more injustice by dealing with politicians, by dealing with corporations, by dealing with businesses and the whole public arena. So that's what I get to do. It's really fun. What I'm doing this week with these sessions is five, you know, hour-long opportunities to expose people to some aspect of that work. And as you can imagine, it's a bit of a challenge. So if this is the only session you get to on this topic, then you'll just get a slice, and it will hopefully whet your appetite, and you'll want to know more and find that out in some other ways that I'll tell you about. And my hope is simply to get people who don't know about it to know and to think maybe that's something I or we as a church might want to get involved in. And some of you are already in a part of some of that, and so this just hopefully stirs you up again and it helps you think about new ways to keep your congregation active. those of you who don't use that congregational idea in your own life, or if you're in a situation right now where that's not your realm, I mean, I'm even thinking here at Holden, that there are ways that some of these tools can be put to work in any community of people, whether they're a faith-based group or whether they're something else, a workplace or a school. So really adaptable kinds of things that can have good effect in many places around our lives. All right. So today what I want to do is build on what some of us were able to do yesterday, which was this one-to-one conversation. And so just a quick review for those of you who were here, and a quick, really quick kind of capsule of what that is. I did hand out a sheet yesterday, and if you already got one, even if you didn't bring it with you, the one-to-one starter kit, don't take it. Just take one if you didn't get one yesterday. Pass those around. Because that's about all, except for a few minutes that we're going to spend remembering together, those who were here. That's about all you're going to get of that tool. But it's a good cheat sheet, I think. So, could I have somebody close the door? Because there's going to be some noises. But what I want to do is I should do one more thing. I should read, in case you don't remember, why you came here tonight. A description of tonight's session. I like to say, some of you, maybe this just dates me, but there used to be this thing, don't try this at home, you know, if you went to a magic show or something like that, or a race car driving, don't try this at home. Well, I like to call this one, do try this at home. And I described it as, if I actually like the idea of my congregation getting involved in its community through organizing, then what? Can I really bring this idea back home with me and not have people just roll their eyes and say, oh, you learned that at Holden? How not to alienate yourself and others while still introducing a transformative model for ministry or daily life. So that's what we're going to do today, is to talk a little bit about some of the applications of especially that one-to-one relational meeting some of us talked about yesterday. So, let's see. I think I need to do the review first. I put it wrong in my agenda here. So a one-to-one conversation, here's the definition that I wrote up yesterday. A one-to-one relational meeting, also sometimes called that, is a natural but uncommon conversation with someone you want to know or know better about their values, their vision, their life, their motivations, what makes them tick, how did they get where they are, and why do they do what they do. And sometimes in organizing, or all the time in organizing, we use the term self-interest as kind of a way to talk about that. And just from the get-go, I'll let you know that's a little controversial, because in this culture, self-interest is thought of as a negative thing. So we, in organizing, haven't figured out a better word, although sometimes I like to talk about vocation. That really, self-interest in some ways is what we as people of faith would call our vocation. What is God calling us out to be? And what are the stirrings in our soul? And what are the yearnings and the joys and the sorrows that make us want to be in the world in a certain way? I think that's also vocation. And so that's maybe a good way to think about self-interest instead of the negative connotation that it has in our culture. So that's what a one-to-one conversation is. It's about 30 to 45 minutes of a very intentional sit-down with one other person, and you as the one who has invited it and has had some orientation to it, either by the sheet of paper or by a training, are guiding the conversation, but mainly you're drawing that person out, trying to find out those sort of what makes them tick, trying to get a deep sense in a short period of time of who that person is. Now, those of you who were in the session yesterday, what were some things that kind of came up that were remarkable about that conversation? Not necessarily stuff I said, but sort of things that you that were happening for you as you were doing that. Some hallmarks of a one-to-one.
Sorry. I thought of something I hadn't thought of for a long time and hadn't talked about. And
so by asking someone you to share, you were able to go back to something that was probably important to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What else? Yes.
And I thought for the short period of time that we had, we got to know quite a lot about this person because we didn't interject our own things.
Thank you, and that's a very important thing. And so this is more about them than it is about you. 70%, I like to say, about them, and 30% about you. It's still relational. You're asking questions, you're building trust, you're saying a little bit about yourself, but then you're always turning it back to them. And then it gives you time to really get to know them and listen. Yes?
You set the mood, so I think there was a nice trust. So it was easy for me to say, tell me about your earliest childhood memory.
Yeah.
And it was fun to see, you know, his eyes light up. Oh, I haven't thought about that for a while. So, but yeah, you gave us permission to do that. So it wasn't so threatening.
And so since I won't be there when you do these, then that'll be your responsibility.
We'll have to call you on the phone.
To find ways to make that person feel safe. And there's a number of ways to do that. It's through the way we sit and the way we make eye contact. The respectful ways in which we ask probing questions.
Yes.
Kind of, you can ask probing questions in a respectful way.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not react, like you said.
And it's non-judgmental.
Yeah.
So if someone says something that you would never do, and they tell you something, you don't go, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. But you you might say, tell me more.
Yeah,
and I think for me it was a discovery of how you can proceed from a rather perhaps a probing question, but not too personal, and then based on what they share, you can go further.
Right, because people do, unconsciously even, we tend to give permission by some of the, what I call breadcrumbs that we drop.
Yeah, almost like when we separated.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you feel about that?
But you might, when you said when we separated, you might go on to talk about something else.
Yeah, it was when we separated, why I had to go on and do other things.
And then
like,
so the next pause, you might say, you know, I noticed that you said, is that something you'd be willing to tell me a little bit more about? Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything else that you discovered or people who've done this in other settings that you discovered about these one-to-ones? Yeah.
Well, when I was asked about a difficult time in my life, I relived the whole thing right there.
Mm.
And so I was very emotional.
And how was that for you?
It was good. It was good. You know, I hadn't thought about it for a number of years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But each time I do, I relive it.
Yeah. And some for some people, and maybe even for you, there's some painfulness, but
yes,
but yet
absolutely.
You have someone who's there with you.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So we begin to accompany one another, not just in what's happening to us right now, but sort of what has happened to us before. Yeah. There, yes, too.
It helped me realize, again, how often conversation is very superficial,
mm-hmm.
and you really aren't listening to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed it was just amazing in such a short time. You felt a connection and you know, that touched your heart rather than just,
mm-hmm.
you know, words. It was a very nice
experience. Good. Well, and I think part of why that happens, and this is something we have to really work hard at, is that what I would coach is not to be thinking, what's my next question going to be? Because we're sometimes afraid that, you know, there'll be a lull or that there's something required of us. A certain amount of ground to cover, and so we're constantly maybe thinking, well, what will I ask next? And then you miss what you should ask next based on what they just shared. And so I give you this sheet, and it's got some questions on it, but it's warnings all over it. Don't ever try to do all of these, or don't feel like you have to cover all this ground, or just pick one or two, or only insert them when there's a drive period. Because usually it's natural, it's coming from what they're sharing and your own curiosity and courage to go somewhere with them. I don't know, Mike, if you can remember this, but yesterday I think you said something to me about it's funny that one-to-ones are at the basis of community organizing. Do you remember that comment you said to me? Okay, I'll try to remember it. I mean, it was profound. Your experience of me as a community organizer had been that our work was to be very direct and sometimes confrontational of people in power, even sometimes of one another when we're not living up to the values that we tell each other we have, and then you go and do something that doesn't reflect that. Sometimes I call you to account about that. And that was your experience. Go ahead.
Yeah, like, but I've seen when you get out of the public realm, it's very direct. You want to be very efficient with people's time. Mm-hmm. We're not going to, you know, we're going to go at the issues, and we're not going to let go, and we're going to really, you know. And yet, this is really non-directive. There's no agenda to mm-hmm. accomplish other than a relationship.
Right.
Which you, I thought was fascinating.
So there's some irony that this tool would be at the heart of that kind of work. And yet it is. Don't get involved in an organization that has said, we've had enough of that stuff. Enough of that relationship building. Let's just get to work. I'm convinced that the effectiveness of these organizations has to do with the willingness to go deeply into each other's lives so that you have companions who want to be out there with you doing hard things. And some of the people that you have to confront will also have more respect for you because you've spent some time with them as well. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight. That we deal with the people out there who maybe have some power to change things in a similar fashion. We deal with them as human beings with lives and stories and motivations and self-interests and vocations, just like we do with the people that are easy to have those conversations with. So it's not just the thing you start with and then you go out and do a bunch of other things. It actually has its fingers, this one-to-one relational building, has its fingers in all the work of organizing. So I want to move us along then. That was kind of to give you that didn't have the training yesterday a sense of it, and also to say that there are places where you can learn to do this. I wouldn't say you've got to wait till you've had the training. Use that cheat sheet. Talk to some other people. Just give it a try. It's not entirely, it's not a science. It's more of an art, and we can just practice it. And mostly it's about practicing listening. And one of my friends says, and the art of the strategic follow-up question. Okay, so practice is what helps. So what I want to ask you now to consider, and again, I'm going to use the word congregation a lot, but I'm going to ask you in your own mind to extend that into other places in your life. So I'll always talk about congregation, but you might think, oh, that could work in my work life too, or that could work here at Holden. Okay, but congregation is going to be my metaphor for tonight. Let's consider what might happen if people in your congregation, either in an official manner or an unofficial manner, began to have those kinds of conversations on a regular basis. So what's the not official fashion? Well, you could start with doing a list of people that, in fact, I'm going to have you do this tonight. Make a list of people in your congregation that you could imagine going and having these conversations with. The way we're going to talk about this is to look at a really fun resource, a comic book, and tomorrow we're going to be able to be here. We'll look at this more. There's plenty of them here. And these are yours to keep. Got some more? Yeah. I got plenty. And if there's still not enough, I've got a whole box. Anybody need one? Got enough? Okay. All right, so I'm going to have us just look for now at we're going to start at the beginning, but it's page 2. And what we're going to look at here is just a better way than me just telling you, I think, about this, how you could begin to have these kinds of conversations. And remember my title, or my paragraph about today was without alienating people, without people wondering, what are you up to? Although a little bit of that is okay. Okay, so I'll read it to you, and you can follow along on page 2. So it's announcement time at Hope Church, and the food pantry coordinator is making her usual appeal. Go through those cupboards. We need canned goods and non-perishables for the needy. Swell. More corn. Didn't we just do this last week? There must be a better way. At home, Robert and Alina inspected their shelves and had this conversation. Imagine living on nothing but canned goods and non-perishables. I'd die without fresh produce. This is how things always go at Hope Church. We're always putting band-aids on broken legs. And then they dream. And he keeps seeing things in his head, and I just want you to notice all the different ways that you could fix beans. Flavor-free beans, even, okay? And he's thinking about God saying, feed my sheep. That night, Elena could hardly sleep. That's it, we're calling Pastor Kathy. The pastor is in. Robert, Elena, I'm so glad to see you. Well, you might not say that when you hear why we've come. Come in, sit down, what's on your mind? Well, the food pantry announcement Sunday felt like the last straw for Robert and me. And he thinks, oh, here it comes. Well, how so? Well, it reminded us of how stuck in a rut we seem to be at Hope Church. To tell you the truth, I think you're onto something. I've been having similar thoughts lately. Isn't that a refreshing thing to go to your pastor and have them say, thanks for coming and complaining? And Elena, or Robert says, really? I'm surprised. Well, I have a feeling we're not the only ones who feel this way about our church. And then there's all those complaints trying to come out of her closet. I know some people you could talk to. Are you willing? They agree to visit with other members that Pastor Kathy suggests and talk about their dreams and frustrations with Hope Church. So this is the informal way of you, and you don't have to go to your pastor. Maybe you are the pastor, but you don't have to. But it might be a good idea to say, you know, I'm going to be out having some conversations. Or, gosh, having conversations is a good thing. So why do you need to ask permission to do it? If it's about building relationships, that's great too. So Pastor Kathy gave them a list, and they started to make somewhat informal. They didn't have any training yet. But they decided to ask, how does Hope Church meet your expectations? What's been a challenge for you? When have you felt most energized? What hopes do you have? And what do you think we can do about it? Now here the focus is on their church. I trained you that we're here to focus on the person, and I actually think that's a better model. To focus on the person. And you can, but you have your church in common, so you can ask some things about church. But remember, one of my things yesterday was focus more on the actor than the stage. And so the stage is the church. The actor is the person you're visiting. And so really, if you're going to ask something about the church, ask about their feelings about the church and what they like about the church. Let's not try to be problem solvers so much, as that could be one of the things that's interesting about them. Okay? So then Pastor Kathy, on that top left hand on page 5, says, so what did you learn? She says, there's discontent, but there's also hope and energy for new possibilities. And Robert says, so now what? Okay, so that was what I wanted to look at with you in terms of, we're going to do a couple more pages in a minute, in terms of ways that informally anyone can start to have these kinds of conversations in their community of faith, their community of work, their community of school, their community of Holden. What do you think? Comments or thoughts?
So you're saying if they had been trained, they would not have had just these church questions?
There was nothing wrong with what they did, because, yeah, that's right, though. I would suggest that if you've had this training or if you've had this cheat sheet, you could actually go a little more deeply and you could be a little more true to the honoring of the person than they were. But what they did was fine. Yes?
Just to reinforce that, I'm thinking about the number of holes that exist in our culture today and the way that, you know, I open the daily newspaper and it has a poll that they're asking you today's question and showing you the results of yesterday's. And so we're probably a little, in our culture, many of us are probably a little tired of being asked our opinion if it's not going to lead to any kind of deeper relationship.
Yeah, so that's a good reason to I think I hear you saying it's a good reason to be a little bit more relational, not just informational. Yeah. So what I'm going to hand out now and ask everyone to take one, and if you don't have a pen, I've got some of those too, is a worksheet. And the first section is what we just talked about. See, in my training as an organizer, it doesn't work to just say, isn't this a good idea, why don't you try it? My work is to actually get you started along that road, because otherwise it's just a good idea. But if you actually write something down, and there's some pens if people need them, and start to have to think about it, you're more likely to do it. Okay, so just raise your hand for, pass those around, and Taurus, they'll go. If you brought your own pen, pull that out, because I only have a few. Okay. Oh, that one's maybe not even open yet. So I want you to do just on your own, unless you're here with someone right next to you that you could talk to about this from your own community. For a few minutes, write down some names, and I'm not going to collect them, and I'm not going to hold you to account, but I'm going to give you a chance to give that some thought. Just the first section. Just the first section. Some people you could think about having these informal kinds of one-to-one conversations with. Okay? Take a few minutes to do that. Anybody else need a pen? Can I pass those back? Yeah?
So much of it operates on assumption.
Now, if you're holding back because you're trying to figure out anything weird, like, oh, if I write it down, is God going to strike me dead if I don't do it, or something like that, that's sometimes, you know, that's our internal safety valve that's saying, oh, I'm not sure I want to do this. It's a little bit out of my comfort zone. Well, like I said, I'm not going to check these. God's going to forgive you if you don't do it. It's just a great way to start stepping out of your comfort zone.
Did you give us a definition of a listening campaign?
Not yet. I'm sorry. I just want you to fill out the first section.
Oh.
Just the first section. We're gonna go further on there. The first section is just to do some conversations with people that you'd be interested in practicing with. Think of it that way. I gave you 6 or 8 blanks, but if you have 1 or 2 or 3, that's a good start. All right. Now I'm hoping you're not done. But you've got to start. At least you've got the piece of paper in front of you, pen in hand, and blanks to fill in, and maybe you've filled in 1 or 2 or more. So I encourage you, use that for yourself. Now we're going to move to another idea, and that's going to be how we look at section 2 on that. But let's go back to the comic book. Hope that worked. Wherever we left off, 5, I think. So that's an informal, we just talked about it, is an informal way that any of us from today on could start to practice this great tool of relationship building. Now we're going to look at a way that's more formal, that a congregation can, and some of you here from St. Paul Reformation mentioned that you've done this at St. Paul Ref, and so I think as part of Isaiah, and a lot of congregations do it on an annual basis, but can be done. You know, just give it a start. And what it is, it's a more systematic way of together thinking about how to have a set of conversations that last over a period of time. And from it, we begin to learn some more things about the character of our congregation and even share with each other, not what someone told me, you know, that, and here's their name, and you should know that so-and-so is thinking that about this. But we start to hear themes coming out, and we can share those with each other, generally speaking. I heard a lot of people talking about their concerns for the elderly in our community, or their own parents, that kind of thing. So on page 5, What Pastor Kathy does is she says, sends Elena and Robert to a community organizer that she probably met at some ministerium somewhere and has been holding on to this card and wondering, you know, what does God want me to do with this? And God has put this in front of her. Carl, who is the lead organizer at MISHPOT, Metropolitan Initiative for Strong, Hopeful People Acting Together. MISHPOT means justice, I think, in Hebrew.
This is fictional?
Yes. Carl worked for MISHPOT, a collection of 25 faith communities working on issues of common concern and helping each other grow stronger and more vital as congregations. So he asks them how it's going. She says, Elena, we were surprised at how easy it was to talk with people. He says, that's great. You might be ready for a listening campaign. And Robert, like some of you, says, if we only knew what that was. So Elena and Robert met with him, and then he says, he describes an event where participants learn to do a listening campaign in their congregations, a series of one-to-ones with fellow members, followed by an analysis of the responses. And as they leave, Elena and Robert agree. He says, we'll see you at the training, and you can bring 5 people? She says, sure, I bet we can bring 10. And he says, we'll bring 5. He's trying to be a realist. So here is MISHPOT, which remember is about 25 congregations that have already begun to gather as a group, and they're having a training at Faith Church, whatever church that is. And Carl is giving a demonstration. So, Marcy, thanks for volunteering. What motivated you to come tonight? She said, my friend Antonia invited me and it sounded like fun. It is fun. One-to-ones are my favorite part of this job. Actually, I'd say that too about my work. And then he describes what a one-to-one is, which we've reviewed that today. So then he has a demonstration one-to-one, asking her some of the kinds of questions that we did yesterday. What's the hardest thing you've ever had to face? She lost her job, and that was really hard. How did it make you feel? Well, really scared and a little defeated. Say more about defeated. And then here's Elena and Robert kind of whispering in the background, wow, he's really getting personal. Yeah, but she seems okay with it. 30 minutes, people, he sends them out to do their own one-to-ones, just like I did, only I didn't give you that much time. He had 2 hours to do the training, I only had 1. And then we get a whole page of people in varieties of clothing and ethnicities having these kinds of conversations. So the people practice asking questions and really listening. And there are some of the good examples of the kinds of questions that they have. This is still just at the training. And then they go home and they get Pastor Kathy to write a letter to the congregation telling them that we're going to go through a five or six week period of a listening campaign. And she writes this letter that encourages people to say yes if someone calls them for a conversation. So this is one of the ways that it feels official and feels sanctioned and feels if people trust their pastor, they'll feel good about the fact that the pastor says, let's all do this together. And what's not really in here is Elena and Robert now going back to some of the people that they had those more informal conversations and inviting them to be, you know, listeners. And they went to the training with them. And so then they divide up names in the congregation and they start to have these kinds of conversations. And what's on page 9 that's not numbered, but it's after 8, is all of the listeners getting together at somebody's house and talking about the kinds of things they heard and what it was like for them. It's just as important to have a conversation about what it was like for them to have those conversations. So it's what I sometimes call a listening campaign debrief meeting. And again, they're not sharing what individual people said about certain things, but they're saying, I've heard a lot of people saying this, or one or two people talked about this, you know? So it's not breaking confidentiality, it's just sharing sort of themes, okay? And then they all agree to have yet another meeting. This time, to bring everybody who was a listener and everybody who was listened to come to a party and hear the results of what, and you've already assured the people that you talked to that your name isn't getting shared all around about what you told me. But wouldn't you be interested to find out the kinds of things we heard? And people are. They're curious. They know that they probably enjoyed their conversation. and that lots of these conversations were going on. So they have a party. Now you skip page 10, because that's something that happens to Pastor Kathy in the meantime.
Kathy is kind of nothing. So what kind of numbers are you talking about? Like giving us, is there like a guidance for a certain size congregation? How many listeners do you kind of want to have in order to kind of cover the, I don't know.
Yeah, and so this is where it's more art than science. Some congregations decide they want to do as much of every member visit as they can. And those would probably be smaller congregations or big congregations who have a lot of folks who you think would like to be out listening. So you can say an every member visit, but what we did at the church that I first did this at was we asked the computer, well, we didn't quite use the computer, but we just randomly went down the roster of all of our members and picked every fifth member alphabetically. Because we decided we couldn't figure out a certain population that we wanted to touch. We just wanted to have a real random sampling. And so that was how we did that. So that's actually your next question on your list.
And like how many, does it make sense for, if I was a listener, how many should be on my list?
Great.
I mean, 20 might be too many, but 5 is too few. I mean,
there is a little bit of a formula that we think works for that, and that's that if you're going to say 5 to 6 weeks, which is a good number of weeks to do a listening campaign, you don't want to wear out a congregation, and that's what you're doing, but 5 to 6 weeks is kind of a nice time, then how many visits might each person be willing to do in that amount of time? We usually say between 5 and 10. And if you can only do 3, but you really want to be a visitor or a listener, we'll take you. But that's what, ahead of time, when you ask people to be a visitor, you say to them, and what a visitor does is agrees to do 5, 8, maybe 10 visits over this 5 and 6 week period. Yeah?
Is this contagious?
What do you think?
I would hope it would be, but I wonder, in your experience, did you find it contagious?
Well, there's a couple ways I would say it is. People do begin to say, you know, I see there's some system to this. I think this is interesting. I'd be interested in being a visitor. You might say that. Another way that I have seen contagion, or that you might qualify this as contagion, one of my good friends who is a Catholic person and was an organizer with me would often lead worship. She was a laywoman, but she would help lead worship on Sunday mornings in a large Catholic parish. And they were in the middle of one of these, like 4 weeks into it. And she was up leading worship that day, and she looked out into the congregation, and she was very confused because people weren't sitting in their assigned seats. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was before worship started, and there were little clusters of people, and they weren't where they usually are. They were chit-chatting with each other in ways that she had never seen it before. And she had to think about it a minute. She realized it was because of the inreach, the listening campaign that was going on. People began...
I can visualize that if I were a visitor and I visited you and you liked the experience, you might take some of the same kinds of things with your friends.
Yep. And some of that we just don't know.
Yeah.
We can't be in the homes when that's happening, but maybe you do that with a parent and they speak somewhat differently to their child that evening or at the dinner table. Or spouses or partners might, you know, decide to, or they might even say, you know, somebody asked me this question today and I hadn't thought about it in a long time. What do you think about them? And then they might ask that question. So I think that probably happens, but it's hard to measure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I want to ask you to do now, again, being very practical, is to think about people in your community, faith community, work, school, Holden, whatever it is, who you think might be a good visitor. Not someone you would visit. Is that what the next thing is on there? Help me out.
Listeners.
Yeah, listeners. Okay. And then you can go to the next section too, but don't skip over this one, to think about whether there's a particular population in your community that you might want to target. I told you about the random selection that we did at my church. But some will say, let's visit all the people who have joined our church in the last year. Or, let's visit all the people who've been visiting our church recently. Because some churches, that's a good number. Or, let's visit all the young parents. So So you might want to think strategically about that. So that's what the next section is. You can put a population, or you can put everybody, or you can put random selection, or whatever. So those two sections, take a few minutes to fill those out.
We're starting Stephen Ministers. You know.
Stephen Ministers are good because they're already good listeners, right?
Yeah.
They've been trained.
Just in the training of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you have to be kind of careful not to start too many practices at once.
But,
yeah.
You know, this might be something that the Holy Guy in the family could use. Except it's such a structure.
A minute, but I want you to go right back to that. On that listing of people, I let you go on your own for a while because you can think well about the people you know, but now let me give you a couple tips. It doesn't, a person who might be a good listener in this is probably someone who's a good listener. You know what I mean? So there may be people who want to do this who you don't think are really good listeners. So don't put them on your list. But if they hear about it and say, I want to be a listener, tell them, well, let's go to this training because it's going to be helpful to all of us so we really can be good listeners. Okay, so I think God may be calling that person not just to be a listener in this campaign, but maybe that training session is going to be a time where they begin to think more about, be more strategic about listening and not always talking, right? But So don't eliminate people who want to do it, but on your list, I'd suggest that you put people who you think are sensitive and are already good listeners or who are really curious. Another group that you might not want to put on your list are the people who are really complaining a lot about church, always complaining about church. But again, maybe they're going to be the ones who say, I want to do this, and that could be a turning point. So, you see the difference? You don't have to write down everybody just because you want to be nice. On the other hand, you won't eliminate people who volunteer, even if they're not on your list in the first place.
What if you got someone that came to the training session, and as a pastor, we kept saying to ourselves, this ain't going to work. How do you defuse that without hurting feelings?
A couple ways, I'd say. One is assign them fewer visits to do. Have a conversation with them. Ask them to practice with you. You know, and in that practice time, you've set up an opportunity where you're offering to give some feedback and say, you know, that was a good question. Be sure to give the person enough time to actually answer it before you launch into a story of your own. So it's touchy, but. It may be the opportunity where this would be the time to say something that's a little bit that they need to hear about their own listening skills. But that's why I think it's a little That's why I wouldn't have you put their name down, but if they really want to do it, it's hard.
No, yeah, because people were thinking of two or three names going, oh, hope they'll come.
All right, so take just a couple more minutes for the writing the names down and also the kind of population, if it's a special population in your community that you might want to target for this kind of campaign. And again, remember, you're not making a commitment to anybody at this point. You're just imagining.
This is why
people are going to
target
population. Oh.
Oh, yes, please.
I don't want to interrupt the flow of what you're doing, but I wanted to bring something up in this session.
Okay, so let me just wait a minute.
You're developing an argument here.
Yeah, but I will have you come back to that as soon as people are done with this.
Okay.
What do you say at work? Target, is that because we have a problem with lead salt and we're gathering these people for that?
That could happen. I think that could happen, but if there isn't a, and I also don't want you digging in your gut to try to figure out a problem that's not there. So this is a great thing to do in a healthy congregation too, just get people know each other better. And then you might just say, well, what's doable? Certain number, and then we're going to pick randomly, or we don't really have a practice for reaching out to our newest members, maybe that would be a good place to do this thing. So it's an either or. But if there's a particular issue, then you might have a particular topic that you want to talk to. All right, so I'm going to, again, ask you to take that with you and continue to build on it. Now I want to see if this, go ahead with your question, and then I'll determine whether I want to put it at the end or not.
Okay.
So.
Well, looking at your the websites you recommended, I see the Industrial Areas Foundation, and that made me realize that I've heard about this conference effort. I'm wondering about people who come from the Seattle area. I think it's the Sound Alliance. I'd like to know if anybody in the foundation has participated in that. I heard from a friend of mine in a church that they got through the training part and that somehow there was an impasse after that. So I just wonder if anybody here has come across that.
Does anybody know about Sound Alliance in the Seattle area?
It's exactly what you're describing.
And so since we don't have anybody who does, I'd love to spend some time talking with you about that, because I do know a little bit about it, but I won't, since it's not here that others are a part of that, we won't do it here. Is that all right?
Yeah, except that if there's something to be learned from that experience, maybe other people would want to hear about it.
Right. So, that would put us on a different track than I was going to go tonight. So let's spend some time, and then we can decide if there's other folks that we might want to talk to about it, and I could maybe bring it up at another session when I've got more time. Okay. So what I want to do next now is a bit of a shift, but I want to give you enough to think about. So what about this will help us in our community? Now, the comic book talks kind of in a real, real cursory way, shows how they get into the community. But I want to do that with you in a different way. So do this. Put down what you've been working on and kind of do a mental shift. Now we're going to think about, we've been doing this in the congregation. Now let's think about our context as a faith community. And so this is what we in organizing might call a power analysis or a relational analysis of our community. So in church work, we often talk about outreach to the neighborhood, but that has a certain a tradition and context. So we're going to use the word outreach again, but we're going to try to think about it in a different way. So let's think about all of the different kinds of neighbors that we have around our churches. Just name some of the kinds of neighbors. And I'm using that in a really generic sense. Who is my neighbor?
Realtors.
Ah. Okay.
Well,
keep going.
Our church has begun keeping a record of new arrivals to the community, new people that move in, and we're picking they move in typically in our area like 20 a week.
Okay. So new neighbors, new actual neighbors, like residents. Okay. What else?
Secular.
Say, like what? Let's get more specific.
More than secular?
Yeah. Like, what are some of the secular neighbors around us?
People who go to the library.
Okay.
Schools.
Let's do library visitors, visitors, and staff. Because there's the people that run the library. There's schools. And in the schools, there are
students,
teachers and students
and
administrators and parents. Okay?
Homeschoolers.
Good. Homeschoolers who often have associations. Okay? Who are other kinds of neighbors around us?
You see,
it's lawyers.
Okay. So I'm gonna I guess maybe sometimes they're just by themselves, but lawyers are firms. Okay. What else? Who else?
Or there are other nonprofits like
nonprofits. What was somebody over here said one? Did I hear construction?
Construction workers.
Yeah. Construction workers. What do sometimes construction workers gather around as an organization? Unions. Okay, unions are great people to go visit. In fact, a lot of them have had the same kind of training. Who are other neighbors? We've kind of left out. What's that? Other churches or other faith communities. There's interfaith groups, other faith communities, not just churches.
Businesses.
Yes.
Hospitals.
Uh-huh. Now I get in trouble. My spelling.
Restaurants.
Good. So, and I would think, in terms of restaurants, any kind of merchant in your area, okay? There's a whole section missing yet.
Local farmers.
Government. So, alderpersons, if that's your kind of government, or mayors, or just then we can just say government in general. Elected officials, firefighters.
Homemakers.
Police, farmers, rural areas.
Farmers in rural areas, yep. What was somebody else? I missed one.
Police.
Uh-huh.
Retirees.
Okay. What's that? Retirees, yeah. So there's the whole category of what the traditional idea of neighbor, the resident, and then just lots of different kinds of residents too. But this is what I mean by who is our neighbor. And so when I talk about a different kind of outreach, I'm talking about how do we begin to have relationships with people who fill these kinds of roles in our communities. The one-to-one can be adapted to have those kind of conversations in your community with the same purpose as you do them in your church, at least from the start. It's to build relationships. So what's really different about a kind of outreach where you begin to have conversations like this with any number of these people is it's about them. What's our usual way of doing outreach as church?
Knock on the door.
And tell them what?
Come to our church.
Come to our church. Let me tell you about our church. We're having this event down at our church. Why don't you come to our rally? We've got room in our pews for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, eventually, that might be part of the conversation that we have once we've built a relationship with people and begun to let them know that we care who they are. And even maybe we don't use these words, but give the sense that God is already at work in the midst of them. And it's a relational meeting. I don't have time to talk about it in great detail, but you can probably imagine that you're not going to set up a 45-minute conversation with most of these neighbors. So I've put on the board here, and I'm looking at my time. We're almost up. I didn't want to just dump a lot of papers on you. So you can contact me for things if you're interested. This is my website, or my email, susan.eng@elca.org. And I have some materials where if you decided to conduct a congregational listening campaign, how do you analyze all that material that you have? I can give you some crib sheets on that. I can talk with you more by email about how to do that kind of reaching out into your community. How to condense a one-to-one so that it's still a relational meeting, but it doesn't last 45 minutes with the neighbor standing on their doorstep.
Can you say a little bit more what you mean about making it about them?
It's that the one-to-one is about them, not you. So the kind of relational meeting you're going to have with your neighbors is also a relational meeting. It's asking them, for example, if I'm going to have a one-to-one with a teacher, I'm going to ask them, how did they get into teaching? What keeps them here? What's hard about it? Just the same kinds of things, but it'll be shorter, and that's what I don't have time to go into. If I go to a mayor, I'm not going to necessarily say, you know, we're really concerned about this and this and this in our community. We want to know what you're doing about it. In fact, there's an example of that in the storybook about ways that people went to talk to the grocer and just started demanding of him to have fair trade and this and that and the other thing before ever finding out who he was. So then they went back and tried to cover their tracks and do it more relationally the next time. They asked him some questions about himself, or they said to him, what can we do to help you deliver the kind of goods that we're hearing our folks want? And that was just a much more relational and caring kind of response. So that's what I mean. So I think the last section, and I'm just going to let you take it with you, not ask you to do it with me right now, of that of your worksheet is to actually put some names next to these kinds of neighbors. Because once again, if you go out of here thinking, oh, well, yeah, we could talk to the police, we could talk to the mayor, but you never in your mind fix in your mind who is that actual person, you're less likely to do it. And you ought to do it with some other people. This is really something that makes more sense to do when you've got some momentum going and other people who might be interested in carrying that relationship building beyond your congregation. Yeah, Judy.
What do you tell them is the reason that you've come?
I try to keep it as simple as possible. So you're talking about out in the community.
Yeah.
Say, we're from a church. Name your church. We're trying to get to know our neighbors. You're one of our neighbors. We're really interested in how you feel about being a part of this neighborhood. Can we come and talk with you? And then you might see, you know, you'd say 20 minutes. You want 20 minutes of your time. All we want to do is get to know you. Be interesting to find out what you think of things that are going on around here.
Is it still one-to-one, or do you have two or three?
I usually like to go with, depending on sort of, you sort of go up in terms of levels of power that people have in your community. The more power they have, the more likely you want to go with other people. But if it's a neighbor, you know, a residential neighbor, there's no reason why you can't do that yourself or with one other person. If it's a merchant that you're familiar with and want to sit down and have a cup of coffee with them, one-on-one is fine also. But we actually call meetings with mayors and elected officials and people with a lot of power, we call them power one-to-ones. And they're usually not actually one-to-one. They're usually at least 2-to-1. So that's what we have time for tonight, folks. And I appreciate your kind of just moving through a number of things with me. I have just a couple more minutes to answer questions or take comments that people might have. I'm open to challenge or insights that you might have. Anything people want to raise this late at night?
I guess I would just say most experiences that I've had with churches, taking surveys, finding out what talents are, what people are wanting to do, end up in the miscellaneous box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so Judy, say, does this feel different, or are you saying that it's partly a caution?
Oh, it would be definitely a caution.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to just say a couple things about that. First of all, I think you're right, that we've got to be, if we tell people that we're doing a listening campaign, we're going to share the results, and we're going to see where we want to go from there, then you've got to do that. You've got to follow through. If you say we're going to have a listening campaign just so we can get to know each other as a congregation better, that's actually builds community. But don't set the expectations any higher than you think you're able to go. But you can have a listening campaign, and that's all you do. And say, this was how we wanted to get to know each other. Usually it doesn't stay there, even if that's the expectation you set, because there is energy and there's new ideas out there. But be honest about what you intend to do with the results. Yeah. Other questions or comments?
Well, I think one of the first reactions to
either of those things is going to be, okay, what kind of campaign is this?
Mm-hmm.
Is it to get, dig us out of a financial hole?
Yeah.
Is it how do we do better better outreach in the community or like that?
Are you crypto a Jehovah's Witness?
Yeah.
Sure, if you're thinking about out in the community, yeah.
Yeah.
So again, I mean, it's a simple tool, but look through this and see, like, the letter that Pastor Kathy writes to the congregation is real straightforward, and as long as you stay true to what you say you're going to do, at least with the congregational piece, people begin to let down their guard, especially as the visits start to happen. And all of a sudden people aren't being asked to serve on the stewardship committee or, you know, fill out the bell choir or whatever it is. People begin to build trust around that process. So
I don't quite understand how it's all pulled together. Say you had 10, 15 people that were listeners and they go out and they listen to people.
Mm-hmm.
Then is there something that happens that the listeners?
Yes, and I'm going to, because of time, I'm going to say two things. One is read the book. It's just, you know, you get a sense, not in great detail. And then if it's something that you would really be interested in doing, I've got additional resources. And I just didn't want to bring lots of papers for people who might not go forward and do it. So, and they're like two page guides on how you might start to analyze that conversation. All right, thanks, folks.
Thank you.
We're going to really look at the comic book tomorrow if you're able to be here. We're going to go into how you might use that in your conversation.